We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Episode 471 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and he's Levon, a.k.a. Barcelona. And today, Levon, we say goodbye to two legends, Sergio Busquets and Jordi Alba, and technically a goodbye, and we're going to have a big conversation about the Spotify Camp Nou, or the Camp Nou, of course. But would you like to start with the clickbaity question here about Jordi Alba, or do you want to start just waxing poetic about Busquets? Or hey, we could even get into Ansu Fati, who had two goals against Mallorca. So I'll ask you this time around, where do you want to start our show?
We could take it wherever we want, but hey, everybody. I was so surprised that Alba called it quits. Like, I don't think anybody really saw it coming because he's due so much money. So for him to, and also because 1 week before he announced it, the story was very much that he did not want to go anywhere. So for him to say, hey, you know, that's it. I'm leaving this summer. And with the added perspective of him being an amazing teammate throughout most of the season and being super supportive of Alejandro Balde in particular, I'm very happy that he and both Busquets, who I think both of them would have been good, would have played well for us next season, but for both of them to choose to leave now with a title and with a lot of love from the Camp Nou, yeah, I very much respect that decision. And I think it's kind of nice the way this gets wrapped up.
100%. I think I cannot emphasize enough about Alba's decision to leave when he did. And we can do the Busquets thing and the pivot thing. We did it earlier in the week. But in the case of Alba, I 100% agree that he could not have left at a better time for him and the club together in union based on the stains across his legacy. Like Alba, because of the way I think that Culés had started to view him in not this season, but the prior two seasons or three seasons, that it seemed like he would very well overstay his welcome for all intents and purposes. But you're right. I mean, to leave what is 20 point, well, next season was going to go up. So what is about 23 million euros on the table, to leave that number on the table, again, making, which I guess my question for you too, is that Barcelona must have had that 23.5 for Alba in their viability plan that they submitted to the Liga. Because again, as you said, a week ago, he wasn't expected to leave. Comes out on social media, said, yeah, I am kind of surprising everybody. I talked to my family. This is the best thing for me. And it is interesting because while you say that he is leaving, I think for Alba, especially in his case, there is a lot left to give in his career. I would expect that he's going to be around for another 2, 3, 4 seasons. The same thing with Busquets. Like both those players, as you mentioned, have a lot left to give. And for Alba, for all that we see of him as a squirrel, and it seems like he's a hot-tempered guy, you're right. His reputation should be that he was a great teammate, beloved by everybody from Messi to Ansu Fati, who asked for his jersey in the dugout right before the game ended. So he was a beloved teammate by everybody around. And I mean, even the little things you look at, like the rough up that him and Koundé had last year, and then you look at this year and they're just perfect teammates. And it's just everything about him that people can say was negative seemed to always happen on the field, because he never got in trouble off it, as much, again, as a mercurial character that he was. And we see that the highs for him emotionally, and some people like this on the field. I tend to be the opposite when I play sports, but he's up And when he's up and he's down, when he's down, he's crying when he's coming off the field. While Busquets was the perfect antithesis to that, you know, smiling, applauding, never a lick of emotion from him, but almost the exact same way both of those played on the field and the way that they represented themselves for the club for all that time is the exact same way emotionally we'd expect them to say goodbye. And yeah, for Alba, yeah, I mean, it's a perfect storm. It is the perfect moment for him to leave and for him to choose that. I think the club was also ready. Balde is a starter, undisputed. And Alba graciously was a backup for a whole season, which you could not possibly ask more from him. And I think truly, I mean, you and I and Kevin Wynn and everyone else on Twitter, you guys are getting on me. But I think the question I'm going to ask you, the clickbaity thing is, do you think Jordi Alba is a Barcelona legend? And do you also think that it's recency bias that the way he's leaving is going to greatly improve his legacy and greatly improve the way that we remember him?
I mean, what's a legend? Kubala is a legend.
Yeah, he's a statue. I mean, let's lower the bar a little bit. I mean,
Laudrup is a legend. So Messi is a legend. Xavi and Iniesta are legends. Is Jordi Alba a legend? I don't know. I don't know if he's a legend, but he's certainly one of the great left backs that Barcelona and Spain and Europe have had. And I think like the only problem with Alba is that there have been some very specific games where he has let us down, and the hurt of those games, Anfield in particular, are not easy for some people to forgive. But at the same time, he's just such a good footballer, such an incredibly good left back. We talked about it the last time that I was on, when he came on for just 20 minutes and completely changed the game and showed us how much Balde still has to learn, and Balde might never get there and get those things right. Fortunately, Balde is getting other things right that Alba maybe struggled with sometimes. But a legend is difficult to say. But I do think that the way that he leaves helps his legacy, because he leaves at a time when everybody knows the financial situation that the club is in, and everybody knows that the salaries of Alba in particular is a huge problem for the club. So for him to forgive more than half of that salary and leave and make space for the next generation shows that he loves the club the way that people here from Barcelona love the club. And I think that is something that a lot of people outside of Barcelona, outside of Catalonia, don't always understand, that these players love the club. Busquets loves the club. Alba loves the club. Messi loves the club. Xavi and Iniesta, they love the club. Sergio Roberto, they love the club. They love this club way more than you and I love the club. And I'm saying this as somebody who has been in love with this club for more than 30 years now, since I was a child. But they love it even more. So they're proving this and they're showing this. Gerard Piqué also showed this. The moment that they really saw that they could be replaced, once you show these players that they can be replaced, they don't let their ego or their greed get in the way. They give up money so that the club can move on. So more than whether Alba is a legend or not, what this shows is how much he loves the club. And here I also think that as much as people criticize Alba on social media, that is why in the Camp Nou, the appreciation for players like this is very different, because when you live here, you're part of the fabric of Barcelona, of Catalonia. You recognize yourself and you identify with that, and that is also why it is so incredibly important to have homegrown players in the club, such as, and here I'm going to build the bridge for you like you always do, such as Ansu Fati.
Yeah, well, I was going to go backwards in time a second to answer, not to kind of not agree, but to go on that legend, not even debate, but it's kind of where I ended with, and I repeat it from Monday's show. When it comes to left backs in FC Barcelona history, it is Jordi Alba, it is Sergi Barjuan, and it is Eric Abidal. You can order them whatever way you want as far as who was better or who did what or where or how many titles they had or what they meant or to the teams that they meant to. But in Barcelona history, it's those three left backs. And then pretty much anyone else that has played that position. So, yeah, that's what I would say. And when it comes to legend, it's very difficult, especially across football, to be to even use that word, or to be remembered as an outside or a fullback or whatever. I mean, who is it? It's Danny Alves and it's Roberto Carlos. Is that, I mean, and maybe Lahm from the last, literally from the 21st century. Like which fullbacks would you even call legends, right? From the 21st Marcelo. Century.
Marcelo.
Well, I mean, I don't know. If you call Marcelo a legend, I argue you call Jordi Alba a legend too. They've done a lot of the same winning, and I think Real Madrid PR is just a little bit better than Barcelona did. Like, if Barcelona fans decided to be as apologetic for Alba as Real Madrid fans have for Marcelo, because Marcelo is, his drop off for the last 3 years has been worse than Alba's. Like,
let's not forget that Alba came right after
the moment. Yeah, yeah. That's why I said Eric Alba.
Right after Pep's team, right?
Yeah,
he came the season that Pep had left. It was Tito Villanova who signed him.
Which was nice to see Alba take time also to appreciate and remember Tito Villanova. Because remember, it was Villanova who came in and gave him an immediate chance in that club and wanted him, asked for him, brought him back from Valencia for, what was it, 25 million euros, which is one of those other deals, as you mentioned, where for, you know, Fabregas coming back, it could have worked and maybe it didn't all the way. But other players like Piqué and Alba, those players coming back, they're obviously, yes, they may have cut their teeth, became professionals at other clubs, but they're going to be Barcelona players because, again, that is the club that they've always associated with.
Exactly. So, I mean, Aldo was here for the years that, we did get the treble and we won the league a lot, but he's almost more associated with the decline
Champions
of the club
failures,
than with the rise, because he was not there for the rise, but he was here for the decline. Whereas Piqué and Busquets, they were here for all of it. So that's why when I say Marcelo, well, you know, he was there for all of Madrid's Champions League glory.
Well, it's funny because I go back to the thing you said about Busquets too, how Busquets is and Alba choosing to walk away when they learned they got replaced. But to almost continue that conversation from Monday, if I'm Sergio Busquets and I'm watching FC Barcelona, I don't know if he got that lesson. I think Busquets is leaving arguably before he learned that he could be replaced.
Absolutely.
But again, I will also agree with the sentiment that Busquets is still leaving at the right time. Like, it's not saying it's not on the club to replace him, but he is walking away at an appropriate time where it is kind of like you rip the Band-Aid off and it is time to, whether the club wants to or not, it is time to replace Sergio Busquets in terms of the club's timeline and their history and all those different things. And I had said it too in the five headlines yesterday. It is going to be weird next Tuesday. Now, I know that six, or I don't know what it is going to be in Catalonia. It'll be 12:30 in the afternoon. So 6:30 in the morning here in the East Coast of the U.S. to see that Vissel Kobe friendly in Japan. Not many may be watching. It is going to be weird to see Iniesta put on a Blaugrana uniform later than in theory Alba and Busquets. Now, I think they will have testimonials someday wherever they finish their careers in 4 or 5 years. But I said it's going to be weird. But they don't necessarily have to either.
So, no, they're not traveling with the team.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So I'm saying it's going to be weird that I'm going to see Iniesta wear a Blaugrana uniform potentially eventually later in time than Busquets and Alba if they never return for a testimonial match. You know what I'm saying? So obviously they will play with Barca legends someday. So that's, you know, it's all semantics at that point. But it's just an odd thing that Busquets wouldn't even make the trip to Japan. But I also understand, too, that they immediately, a reminder, too, that they're not retiring. So they are going on the next phase of their careers, unlike Piqué. And their agents, and they're probably already in negotiations and conversations with clubs about what's coming next for them.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, to talk about the game a little bit as you transition me to Ansu Fati, I actually want to just a more broader stroke. I was happy with the game yesterday, overjoyed, especially with the first minute goal, because it allowed them to, sentimental, but it did allow Busquets and Alba to leave playing a style and playing in a match. Again, the red card skewed it all, but playing in a match that was befitting of their best moments. It was all the goals were team goals. It was team football, one touch passing. The ball was moving quickly. It was doing more work than the opposition, you know, than the runs and all those things. And yes, it was still Xavi ball, but it was a combination of everything where Busquets was just able to kind of vibe and do his thing. And they were able to feed him, try to get him to score the goal. So it just felt like it was a celebration of their careers and all that they had done. And yeah, it was enjoyable to watch Ansu Fati, but I'll let you respond to the total game, because I don't know if you watched the five headlines, but I've got a little thing about Ansu Fati here.
Rock on. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, one of my five headlines yesterday, and again, this is a little bit of a repeat, but I don't know, maybe it's because he came out with Alba at the same time when he exited the field. I felt like, and you can tell me if I'm overdoing some of the Gerard Romero stuff, because he said a lot and he's not always right, but he's right sometimes. And you never know those kind of things. But him and a bunch of others in Catalan media had said that a third player was saying their goodbye to the Camp Nou, but it was never revealed and all those things, right? And I think that is just a lot of buzz or whatever. But as I've said to you many times, I, like you, would keep Ansu in a heartbeat. Like, there's no reason to get rid of Ansu Fati. Even if Messi comes, Ansu will likely give up the 10, and that is the biggest ramification on Ansu Fati that we'll see next season, right? That's the only change to Ansu. And Messi also might come in and say, I don't want it. Like, there's a chance that he comes in, just like he did at PSG, and say, no, I mean, you are the number 10. The club gave you that shirt. Keep the shirt, kid. And he might do that. But I don't know. There was this weird thing that said, not Ansu saying goodbye in the way that Busquets and Alba did, but kind of almost saying, see you later. Did you get that sense in the stadium that Ansu scored the two goals? He had his moment, and it was almost like a thank you for supporting me, and I can score goals. I'm still a good player, and maybe I'll see you later. Or do you get the sense that this game for him is a continuation, or we'll say a start of what we'll see even next season? Not that it's like some leaping off point that a game at the end of the season matters, but more of a, because he just looked like himself. He looked so at ease. I mean, he looked so confident yesterday in a way that he hasn't all like for most of the season. And he just felt like there was no pressure on him, as almost as if, as I'm saying, that it's already decided his fate. Like, his future away from the Camp Nou has already been decided. So we almost felt like relief. Like, okay, I can score goals and I'll just succeed as a player elsewhere. And then I'll be back. Don't you worry.
I mean, I don't get the close-ups that you get when you watch the match on TV.
Yeah.
So, you know, the two goals that he scored, they were at my end. And I thought, like, at time he looked a bit tentative on the ball. Whereas, you know, there have been games where he's looked better on the ball, but not good in front of goal. Today was the opposite, or yesterday was the opposite. I really don't know how to read this, Dan, because every story that comes out about Ansu, like, is that the club wants him out.
Yeah.
There's literally nothing else. Now, the same happened with Frankie last summer. So if Ansu really wants to stay at Barcelona, he could very well look at what Frankie de Jong did last summer and say, you know what? No, I'm gonna fight for my dream. And I want to stay here. If yesterday he looked at ease when most of the season he hasn't, would that be because he knows that he's out? And
yeah, or not. Then, or maybe it's that he knows he's safe. Not even safe, but he knows that because again, he very much like de Jong, I put them, when we're talking about like the loyalty to the badge, they're in tier two to me. They're, and no respect to Lewandowski here, but like Lewandowski isn't not say living or dying for that badge, but like it wasn't his ultimate dream to play for FC Barcelona. But Frankie de Jong and Ansu Fati are Kool-Aids through and through. Like, they love the club. They truly love the club as much as non-Catalans can love the club, right? So it's like Piqué, Busquets, Alba, sure. And Messi is an adopted son. He's been there since 13. But also Ansu Fati has been there since 10 years old. It's not like he showed up. Like, he came from 10 years old. Like, he loves that club. He's as adopted in Catalonia. He's now officially lived there for over half of his life. That's how long he's been in Catalonia, in the academy with Barcelona. He loves that club. And when he says, I want to stay, you have to take that into account in a way that if Lewandowski said, yeah, I'd love to fulfill out the rest of my, also his numbers at the end of his contract would want Lewandowski to stay. But if Lewandowski says, yeah, we'll stay an extra 2-3 years, I'd love to do that. I mean, even like a Christensen or another one of these players saying, yeah, or Rafinha would actually be the better example. Rafinha saying, mm-hmm. I want to stay is different than Ansu saying, I want to stay, just because your connection to the club is very different.
I know. And I was really rooting for a third goal. Because as much as Xavi says, well, you know, these last games are not a test. Even the last game in the Camp Nou, Ansu scores 3 goals. You know how Jean Laporta will just get emotional and say, hey, I'm not selling him.
I would also say that nobody will remember, too, in 2 months, how the hat-trick happened. But you know a hat-trick was scored by Ansu Fati.
Exactly.
And that's what history does. They remember those moments, whether or not the stakes of those games met. Like, for all time, I'm going to have to look about how Barcelona lost 3-1 to Real Valladolid. I'm going to have to always remember. How did they lose 3-1 to Real Valladolid? And then I remember, oh, right, Barcelona didn't care. They gave up, and Real Valladolid were fighting relegation. Like, that is why that happened, and everybody had to sit through that game. More worrying is another adopted Catalan player in Balde, who actually, no, he was born in Catalonia, he is a Catalan, in Alejandro Balde, who winds up getting whacked. And I didn't mention the 5 headline just because I didn't know the timetable when it was released, but 7 weeks. My only concern now is it seemed like Xavi set himself up for that, where he said, you know, the left back spot is good with Balde and Alonso. And you and I have talked about Alonso before, and I'm not concerned about the idea of Alonso in the squad. As I've said before, Alonso is fine for player 20 through 25 and for depth and fulfilling the league spots and whatever. Like, as you have all these different competitions, Copa del Rey and Spanish Super Cup, whatever. But for him to be brought in by Xavi and playing as a left center back, now, I know the need is priority to center back, but my concern of moving him back a year later to the left back spot, if Balde, I mean, we saw it yesterday, the fear of Balde getting carried off the field is like, oh no, like he might even miss the next month. I mean, we didn't know. He might miss a month or two of next season. If he had ankle surgery, he's out until probably October, November. So it's just a concern to me that all of a sudden here comes Alonso, and I don't know if that's going to be something the club is going to rethink when you do see Balde go down, because next season, the jump from, I mean, you could argue if they don't bring in a right back either, the jump from starter to backup is no greater than the fullback spots, as we've known. I mean, where if you have your starter, you trust them, and the backup is just somebody you don't entirely trust that position.
Hey, we might end up seriously missing Busquets and Jordi Alba next season. Mm-hmm. It all depends on what we do this summer. I actually quite like Alonso at center back. You know, he's not somebody that I would have signed. And I know that, you know, hey, in some specific games, especially Dortmund and Manchester United, those were not good games for him. But in pretty much every other game that he's played at center back, he's been decent, if not good, even defensively. And the guy passes the ball really well. And he's a set piece threat. So I don't mind him at center back as much. Left back just does not seem like a very good role for him, his specific profile and our specific needs at that position. So what I would not mind is if we get a fullback who can play both on the left and the right. You know, we had Adriano for a bunch of years.
I always liked Adriano. Yeah, he wasn't a starter, but I like Adriano. Yeah, he could play on both sides.
I like him too. Scored some great goals as well. And he could play on both sides. That was perfect. If the talk is, hey, Joao Cancelo, that would be one of the biggest advantages that I can think of, is that he can play both sides. I'm not saying that he's worth the money. I don't know. And also, I don't know if we're going to have any money because, yeah, Busquets and Alba and Piqué and Griezmann are freeing up salary space. But, I mean, everything that I read is about players do not want to leave. Ansu does not want to leave, and I hope he doesn't. But Rafinha does not want to leave either. And Torres does not want to leave. Kessié doesn't want to leave. Like, if nobody wants to leave, then there's going to be no sale.
I mean, it's a great Barcelona problem. I mean, it used to be even that, well, in the last few seasons, that players are just getting paid too much. I mean, it is the problem with big clubs with big pockets, that players, you have no reason to get rid of that money. But even for the FC Barcelona thing, especially when you're talking about a project, if I'm Kessié, I came in, I worked hard in my first year to adapt, to carve out a spot in the midfield, and now I see Busquets leaving. And I should stay for myself and say, hey, next season is even more the same, that we won the Liga this season and we won Spanish Super Cup and we want to do more next season. We failed in the Champions League last year and I want to be a part of the winning project. Like it's hard to tell a player, hey, you were part of our build, but you're not part of the final product. And that is a tough thing to tell any player. No player wants to agree to that, especially in the case of Rafinha and Christensen and Lewandowski and Kessié, who just showed up. It's very much a different case than a Pablo Torre, who, you know, if he's going to contribute, he knows that he's not a starter contributing until two or three seasons down the road, right? Until he's 22, 23, 24, 25. That's when he knows as an attacking midfielder that he'll, in theory, get his real chance. But Kessié's 25, 26 years old, you know, like Christensen the same and Rafinha the same, 26, 27. And Lewandowski is obviously in the peak of his, well, I didn't say twilight, but right before the twilight of his career. So obviously he wants to go out. And speaking of Lewandowski, though, by the way, he played really well yesterday. He had a really, really, really good game, I thought. And same thing with Dembélé. Like they were, even though they didn't make any headlines, when they play at that level up top, it gives Mallorca just, they have no options because they have to constantly keep focus on any little moment that those two are on or near the ball. And they created so much space for Ansu. They created also a lot of space for Gabi in the midfield as well. So yeah, credit to those two yesterday. Lewandowski and Dembélé, I thought were great.
Yeah, no, I thought we were fine yesterday. I thought Mallorca was poor, mostly.
I did too. They're much better than that, yeah.
And also the energy was kind of that, you know, Barcelona was always going to win with a couple of goals against Mallorca because the energy was just there. It's the last day of the Camp Nou and everything. To go back real quick to players not wanting to leave and players wanting to be a part of the winning project, the other problem here is simply the financial situation and the fair play stuff where we have to sell before we can sign. Mm-hmm. So it's not even that you can sign Messi and then turn to Rafinha and tell Rafinha, look, you want to stay, but you're not going to get any minutes with Messi and Dembélé on the team. No, it's the other way around. Like we have to get rid of Rafinha first in order to make Messi happen, for example. But that's not really an incentive for somebody to leave. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this will play out. I know that Matteo Alemany said that this summer is going to be very intense with a lot of things happening. So
yeah, I mean, as I also said on Monday show too, the likes of Lenglet, Dest, Umtiti, I mean, those are even more imperative that those moves are done first. I mean, almost first and foremost.
Yes. But they, like, Umtiti, Lenglet, and they don't have, like, they're not going to come back.
No, they're not. But you still have to make those phone calls and make those deals, and you have to fly to London to talk to Tottenham, and you have to fly to wherever to, because they're still on a contract.
Yeah, but I think that will get done.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying I'm not worried that it's not going to get done, but I'm saying add that to the list. Like, it's a long list of things to do. And it's going to be one thing at a time. So it's like, as much as you say you see in a day that, oh, Lenglet was moved today. Oh, where's Messi? Well, it's like, well, there's only one phone. I mean, maybe these guys have multiple phones, but you know what I mean? Like you're on the phone and Lenglet had to get done. So Lenglet got done and then tomorrow it'll be something else. And that's the way it is.
Hey, I'm just happy that Matteo Alemany is not going to do it while also working on the Aston Villa project.
For sure. I mean,
thank God the guy came back.
Yeah, because I mean, it's going to be really interesting too, because it is, I saw Bojan Krkić sitting right next to him. So the rumors are true that it seems like Bojan is coming back into some kind of role. And then Deco was on the other side of him. And we know that that's going to be, it's basically been announced, but it, you know, that he's taking the place of Jordi Cruyff, and you have then Alemany staying in the same role. So we'll see what that new team, if you will, can do.
Isn't Bojan supposed to be like more of a liaison between the technical directors and the squad?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yep, which is why he's, again, I'd say he's part of that team, regardless of what his role is. But as he is still rather, I mean, he's around my age, so it's like he's still rather like figuring it out what it's like to hang up your boots and be on that side of the game where you're going to games and suits and things like that.
Yeah. You know what I was really surprised by, Dan? In I think the press conference leading up to the game, they asked Xavi, like, hey, you know, in all these years, Barca never produced like a replacement for Busquets from the academy. And then Xavi said, no, we did. Pivotas did come out of the academy. We had Sampe and Oriol Romeu Where's Nico Gonzalez in all of this? How come he's not on the club's radar?
I think that having watched him since he was like 15, 14, 15 years old, he was not ever groomed in the same way that like Semper from the age of 14, 15 on. He always played from when they went from the U7s to the full 11s. He was always groomed as at that position. But Nico was an attacking midfielder until the year when he was transitioning between the U19s and Barca B. When for Barca B, he began under Pimienta, started playing as a pivot. And then the idea of him being a pivot with the first team, as he also bulked up, like physically from 17 to 18, he just bulked up in a way that a lot of those kind of players don't. And he looked more comfortable playing at that in the third division. But I just think they do not view him in the long run. And I if you would say that for the preseason games at least, so you don't want to overdo those. But every time I've seen him as a pivot for Barcelona, he looks comfortable and is not, with the exception of like one time under Koeman, it didn't look entirely great when it was like a double pivot thing. But in the preseason games that I watched him for this season, I really thought that Pjanic was out if they could get him out and Nico was going to stay and basically be the backup to Busquets. Like that's how good it looked. And that made sense to me. But I just feel like Xavi does not see him in the same way that Koeman didn't as a pivot in the long term. Like he's not spoken about in that way.
Such a shame.
Yeah. But to the point on Oro Romeo, by the way, Emil and I did talk about him and the efficacy of that. I actually think Oro Romeo, having watched him at Southampton and this year with Girona, while he does not, obviously he's not Busquets. He doesn't do that to the level. If Busquets in this magical world had never existed, I could have certainly seen Oro Romeo being a bridge between Yaya Toure and then taking over for a few seasons and just being fine where you don't have an all-time legend at that position, but I could see Yaya Toure having stayed in that. We're saying again, if this is it's a wonderful life situation without Busquets. Busquets was like, you know, he was never born. It's a world without Busquets. And so I could, again, see Yaya Toure have done that for a while. And then Oro Romeo comes in and then the club potentially bringing in Cesc Fabregas and then saying, okay, well, what are we going to do here about all this? And of course, yeah, it's a different alternate world where you do all those things. But I think Oro Romeo could have had 7-8 years in the first team, maybe if not even as a starter, but as just a player at that position. Because again, I think the club does produce guys who do that at that position at a high level. But Busquets, it's again one of those arguments, like why can you not replace somebody who's going to start and play 90 minutes every game? It's hard to replace anybody when that guy is automatically on the team sheet every single time, because you got to get minutes from him, and to get minutes from him, you have to be better than him, and nobody's been better than him for 12 years. So it's like you can't expect that you, I mean, they could argue that they produce Nico as a pivot this season. If they bring him back and he plays at that position, then you can immediately add his name to that. Because right now, the only names they're saying are guys that have gone and continued at that position. And again, the reason Semper was brought up is because, as I said, from the U15s all the way up until that last ACL injury when he was 19 or 20 years old at Barca B, because that was the moment. The last, I think it was the ACL or the last knee injury or whatever it was, that was the one that, I mean, it's not that he wasn't good enough, is that he had injuries that completely sidelined him. So whatever the reasons were, like the club really did trust in him as a 16, 17-year-old, and then the injury just blew it all up. And that is, I mean, you look at him in Japan, like he only plays like 35% of the time for Vissel Kobe because he just, he'll be out by 28, 29 as a professional. But
no, it was not injuries, man. The guy can't defend.
I mean, he was 19, but he was like 18, 19 years old. Like, of course, no 18, 19 year old midfielder can defend. Like, if you can, then you're the likes of Busquets when he came up at 19. Like, then you're an all time great. That's what you're going to be.
But the thing with Busquets is if it weren't for Pep, he might not have even made it in first division football.
Yeah,
you know, it's literally Pep, the only coach who liked him when he was younger, and the same with Nico. I think that if Pep or Cruyff would be in charge, they'd be like, hey, give me that guy, and they would not be afraid. They would not be afraid of not winning immediately. But they would want that kid as part of his project. Now, I don't know what's going to happen to him. It's possible that he's never going to develop the way that he would develop if he stayed at Barcelona. And it's also possible that I'm completely wrong and it is simply not good enough. But I think it's a shame.
Watching him with Valencia this year, I would give that loan like a B because he got hurt for like 3 or 4 months, which is not great. But I thought he, coming back from the injury, looked just fine. Like, he's ended the year in a better way than I think he started it. Like, it even took a few games for him to get up to speed. So I think from, like, November through February when the injury happened, he looked okay. It looked like he was putting something together. And I think he continued to build on that when he came back from injury, but he missed all those months in between, which was pretty rough. But
yeah, and I would judge him even more of his season at Barcelona. I mean, he played quite well for us in a lot of matches.
I don't understand why Xavi doesn't like how much he presses. I think he returns, like him and Gavi and Pedri, I mean, they are three of the top six pressing players on the team. Like, I mean, yes, of course you need your midfielders to press, but he fits right in. I mean, that is, I think, his best skill. Not even like when Barcelona have the ball, but when they immediately lose the ball, he can get it back to you in a hurry. And I'm not even talking about his physical build. I just mean, he positionally puts himself in the right spots. And I think there was a few games under Koeman those are the notes I kept taking where it's like, I know it feels like he's not doing anything with the ball. And that is frustrating because that's what you expect a Barcelona midfielder to do. But when Barca don't have the ball, his ability to get it back and know where to be is what I really do think is going to be his calling card.
He had a stretch under Koeman where he was basically our best midfielder. De Jong was not playing well under Koeman the last season. Pedri was injured. Gavi gave us flashes. That was his 1 month stretch where Nico was our best midfielder. It was crazy.
Anyway. And he had that game winner too. He had like that 3-2 game winner. That big one. I remember that.
Yeah, he had a winner and he had an opener at Celta de Vigo, if I don't. So he scored two goals, you know, for somebody on the fringes of the first team. Yeah, anyway, crazy stuff.
Yeah. I think we have one more topic to talk about, so let's jump into that. If people were talking about the end of an era, and I think it was, from a PR perspective, really smart for Barcelona, especially to go and dive into and delve into the nostalgia of the day. Of course, when you're saying goodbye to the important players, stalwarts of your club, you want to say goodbye with nostalgia, and it's what gets everybody happy and excited and just gets everyone in a good mood. Now, the weird part of it, and you can spell this out for me too, I understand that the Camp Nou is getting renovated. Of course, like I understand, I'll read you all, I understand like the deal, we've been through it, we can go through it, but I did find it almost a bit extra saying goodbye to the Camp Nou as if it opened in, because I kept seeing people say it's opened in 1957, which it did. I can go through the history of it. It opened in 1957, but it didn't close in 2023. It's being renovated from 2023 now until December of 2024, as that's what Laporta said. So I'll go through Laporta's comments later too. But it seems like, right, that's going to when it's going to be renovated. And while it's going to look different, it's going to be completely updated, it's still on the same site. There will be new bricks laid. They laid the new brick today with Busquets and Laporta and everyone in tow. And while the seats are going to be taken out and sold, and you know it's going to be a new Camp Nou, but again, to me, it's not a new stadium. The club has moved three times in their history, from the Camp de la Industria in theory, and then to Le Court in 1923, and now to the Camp Nou 1957. Those are the three moves. And to me, like, it's not even going to have a new name. It's like the same stadium. So I don't know. I think, as much as you know, I love history, I love nostalgia, I love getting lost in all of it, but I felt like yesterday we weren't saying goodbye to the Camp Nou. We were saying goodbye to Busquets and Alba. You were saying hasta luego to the Camp Nou because it's going to be now a year and a half before you're back.
Yeah, but it's going to be the Nou Camp Nou.
Nonsense. Nonsense.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But at the same time, it does feel like the end of an era. And it does feel like, you know, our stadium is going to get such an incredible facelift that the new Camp Nou is not going to be the old Camp Nou. You wouldn't be able to recognize it if you were outside of the stadium and you saw the new version.
Yeah.
No, it's basically as if Exhibit is pimping your ride.
No. Okay, you know. Wait. No, I'm going to put a pin on that because I watched that show all the time back in the day. And I will tell you that A, those aren't the same, like the owners of those cars don't do that. And B, with the number of TVs and hot tubs and whatever they used to put in those cars were undrivable, unusable, and the insurance was way, way too much. So the lesson from that show is not about upgrading anything. The lesson from that show is that insurance fraud can be hidden in a beloved MTV show. That is all I learned from that show as an adult. Yeah. But anyway.
Well, that might be a pretty apt analogy, I'm afraid.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. No, but I mean, the stadium is basically going to be unrecognizable, especially from the outside, you know. So again, here, that is part of the feeling, like it's not going to be the old stadium anymore.
Yeah.
They're not just renewing it as in, you know, they're not painting it. They're going to structurally change a large part of the stadium. Yeah. In in this sense. I mean, imagine that, you know, imagine Notre Dame, you know, if they're going to build it back exactly where it was, then it's still going to be the Notre Dame. But if they build it and put like a turn the main tower into like a glass monstrosity, would it still be the Notre Dame?
Right.
Yes, because the foundations still are still the same, but at the same time, the building is going to be different, right?
Yeah, and I think I can definitely agree with the idea that, as I mentioned, every time Barcelona has, we'll say, moved stadiums, it's because the demand of the club was too large to fit that stadium. I mean, that's been historical times when the club has moved. And again, 1957 is when it opened. Huge move that Barcelona made despite the current state of Catalonia at the time, how Franco felt about it, and then the success of Alfredo Di Stéfano going on at Real Madrid at the same time. So Madrid had built the Santiago Bernabeu in 1947. And I think while people would connect it, everything I've always learned and read about the reasons why the Camp Nou was built is because 1951, Kubala showed up, and it was as simple as by 1954, they were like, oh, this guy is filling the stadium beyond, like, we can make a lot more money here by not even expanding, but by building a new stadium from Le Court and putting it up. Like, that was, it was talked about in the 40s, but the club never could afford it, obviously, with the economy in Spain at the moment. But by that time, in the mid-50s, they had enough money coupled together, and they said, okay, financially, this is going to help us out a lot. So work began on the Camp Nou in 1955, again, midway through when Kubala was there. It was put down with concrete, iron, and it also put the club in a huge amount of debt. The price tag at the time was 288 million pesetas, which would be awesome if that was the current price now, but things have changed since then. But yeah, the stadium was opened in 1957, 93,053 spectators. And I think the big story here, of course, why this is all being done, to give you a little headline to it, is that at the time when it was opened in the 57, 93,000, it was expanded in 82 for the FIFA World Cup, 120,000 at the time. It currently sits 99,000 plus, and it was for decades a mecca of football. It was the largest. It is the largest in Europe. It's seen with this great reverence, and it was used a lot. But the last few seasons, it has. It has fallen behind with all of these new major stadiums that have been renovated around Europe, that it, In all purposes, you and I, and as many listeners as we know, have been to the bathrooms. We waited in line waiting for food. Like, we've been around. We know that it was time. It was time to renovate everything. I've tried to work up there in the, you know, not without a press credential, but I've been up there trying to get some video and do things up there with media, with the club, and the internet, the Wi-Fi. It's problematic when you're trying to do anything beyond maybe check your phone, maybe check a score and things like that. So yeah, I totally understand that it is time for the club's history to kind of be renovated as well, where it's time for Barcelona's new stadium to once again become a leader in Europe. So it was nice to see little stuff that for me matters. Like, if people saw personally, I did PA, that's public announcing, for an event at halftime at MetLife Stadium there, the old Giant Stadium or whatever. And so little things like that were cool. When I saw Manel Vich, a name that I didn't really know, but he was the club's announcer from 1956 all the way to 2016. And just hearing that name, learning about him, was really cool. He was there the first game of the stadium in 1956, a 6-1 league win over a team, Real Jean, which I can't imagine most of us have ever heard of because they're in the fifth tier now and they haven't been anywhere in the second tier since like the 70s. So the big question, though, coming up for you, and Laporta kind of answered some of it for us. He said the landmark date, November 29th, but more likely that they will return in December of 2024 without any hiccups or anything like that. But it is construction.
That's very optimistic.
It is optimistic, and that's why he said that. So the club, it's an interim, will be playing at Montjuic, well, in Montjuic, and it will cost, in terms of revenue, $90 million a year, including lost revenues. That is the projections for all of those things. It is a 55,000 capacity athletic stadium, which, again, while it was 1992 Olympic Games and all those things, that's where you may know it. The season ticket prices have gone way up, and this is kind of where you enter back to the picture here, because while the club is trying to sell sections of the turf, other memorabilia around the stadium, old stadium seats, and all those different things. Ticket prices, they tried to boost them up. People weren't buying them because of all the difficulty it is even getting there. And so they had to lower those prices by 50% of the initial cost that they had them on Thursday, just to make sure people are filling in at 55,000, which again is going to be a lot of revenue loss. So, I mean, as much as I'm worried about all those things, those are things that are also in the viability plan. Those are things that are in the financial plan. Like, you can read the financial reports. Like, this is all being taken into account in the bigger picture of things.
Yeah, so I wasn't going to go to Montjuïc, in part because it is a pain to get there. Like, I live right next to the camp now, so it's particularly easy, but I've always lived like within 20-25 minutes walking of the camp now. But Montjuïc, there's no good way of getting there. And then leaving the stadium also takes forever. The stadiums need the players need to go by coach, by charter bus to get up to the stadium, because traffic is so bad to get up there that, you know, they can't guarantee that the players will get there on time if they would drive their cars there. So that's just an example. But there was that. There's the fact that I am traveling until mid-November, so I would miss the first 2.5 months of the season. Not sure when the season is going to start. If it starts end of August, then yeah, almost 3 months. And the prices were quite high, right? So I was like, well, you know, I can't afford to pay even more than I'm paying right now, and missing and miss like 3 months of the season. Like, that's just not, I cannot justify that to my wife and my daughter. Like, hey, you know, why am I going to spend all of that money to go lose even more time going to matches, which is time that I spend less with my family, and it not even being worth it for the first 3 months? But now that they've lowered the prices by 50%, and I've heard that the first half of the season, they will play a lot of games at the opponent's stadium because the Montjuïc won't be ready. Ooh. So now I'm already kind of like thinking, maybe I can go.
Well, I mean, I would also argue that if Messi does resign, if they do sell Rafinha, we'll just say Rafinha, and Messi does arrive, well, it's going to be wild to be like, okay, well, because we wanted Messi to say goodbye the right way, he's going to have to play at the Estadio Olímpico Luis Campañas. But in the same way, the second he signs on, people are going to buy those tickets. Like, it's I think it's a wrap.
Yeah. I wasn't even mad when the tickets were so expensive because the club is in need of money. I just think they didn't expect so many people to say like, hey, I'm not going to pay for it.
Right.
But then that's the way the socios are. Here in Catalonia, they have a saying, la pela is la pela. So, which basically means that, you know, you don't spend money very easily. So, yeah, it is what it is. We'll see how it goes. Even if I don't get a season ticket, I'll probably go for a couple of matches here and there. And hopefully we'll be back in the camp now soon enough. I will try to buy a seat from the camp now, if possible. My seat, the one that I've been sitting in for the last 6 years, and then I'll take it to a carpenter or a furniture maker and ask him to turn it into something that my wife will tolerate somewhere in our home.
Well, we are looking forward to seeing a picture of that. I hope you can have your seat, but or any seat. I mean, there is. I mean, I'm hoping that there's enough, and those are reasonable price, but we'll have to see about all those things. But anyway, yeah, the next part of our conversation would have to do with global inflation and things like that. So I don't want to bore everybody to death. I think that kind of wraps it up for this one. Barcelona do play one more time, Celta de Vigo, next week, or the end of this weekend on Sunday. But before that, so we're going to shift our focus because I planned for Friday a preview of the Women's Champions League, which will be against Wolfsburg. And then, of course, I'm going to be reviewing that match as well. So there's two games taking place this weekend. Again, very little stakes for the Barcelona-Celta de Vigo one, other than Celta de Vigo, if they really mess it up, they can go down. If they lose by Barcelona by too much, so Celta, it could be a problem for Celta at home, but that's, again, not really related to culés. But again, more importantly, the big match is on Saturday, Champions League, Women's Champions League final against Wolfsburg for the Barca Femini. So again, that is the content that's going to be taking place throughout this week. But again, Sunday also have the five headlines, the match review. So you can anticipate that and look forward to that as well. So that'll wrap it up. Follow him on Twitter and or down in the show notes below, of course, Barceleb. And then we are on Twitter, Instagram, different things, the Barcelona podcast, Patreon, YouTube, all that stuff. So thanks so much for listening to the show. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon for Sports Barca.
Peace out, Barca.